Well, thank you very much, Remo, for that introduction. And I'd like to just start by saying also thank you particularly to Veronica and to Piotr for all the hard work they've put in and for inviting me here. It's really delighted to be here because I've not been in Krakow since 1970, so it's a good experience to come back. I also thought maybe in the spirit of what Peter said, I should just say a little bit about who I am, because I think people do not know me. And again, Remo correctly labelled me as an urban planner. But I think my career has often been working across disciplines, and I think that may be one thing we find, I hope, through our discussions, that actually the important bits of learning are where we cross over fields rather than just staying within our own field. So my background is I did a geography degree many, many years ago, and then I did a town planning degree, and then I worked as a planner in Glasgow, I guess just about at the time when it was beginning to use your terminology, to implode. And then I became an academic, and I taught for a long time at Technological University in Edinburgh, and I see AGH is a technological university, so somewhat similar. And I was professor of planning and spatial development, as we call it there, until June of this year, when I left the university and continued working really part-time and mainly as consultant. And I've also been president of the Royal Town Planning Institute and president of the Commonwealth Association of Planners. And my research in recent years has been, I guess, around territorial development in Europe, around themes of, there's some stuff on housing and housing markets. I've done work on skills in planning, which I'll talk a little bit about, and really the work on the interrelationship between planning systems and things like housing markets and housing land. So that's a brief summary. Let me explain how I want to approach this. I want to talk first of all about the co-orbit model, and as Remo has said, the approach I took was to more or less take each of Remo's five panels, although I think not in the same order, and try to talk about them. And then I want to concentrate a bit on the aspect of skills, which we may look at in more detail when we come to the workshop on to discussion on tools. But hopefully I'll introduce some comments that can perhaps be taken further there. And then I'll try and perhaps offer some concluding comments, although when I sent this off I realised I hadn't put concluding comments on the slides, so I do apologise. The whole thing was very rushed, and I also apologise that there are some errors in my paper which I've written that I didn't correct. So that's roughly what I want to talk about in the next bit. And I think I would say first of all on, let's put that one up, yeah. I mean, I think clearly the issues that COVID has focused on are important issues, I think, across much of Europe. And I totally accept this notion that one of the big challenges is what you have called urban implosion, the pattern of disinvestment, particularly but not exclusively by the private sector, buildings becoming empty, land becoming vacant, a general rundown of the area, And the problem is how to create the transformation, how to regenerate that area. So I think that is certainly important. And as Rima has already mentioned, I've been, particularly with my Commonwealth role, quite involved in situations in Africa and Asia of rapid urbanisation. And I think the two are indeed connected, as you say, in part, but not exclusively, by new international division of labour and by industrial relocation. But I think that's not the whole story either. So I think definitely it's an important issue. It's a very practical issue. I think it's an issue where it is good to exchange international experience and to involve dialogues between theory and practice. And I think the model that has been introduced to us this morning has certainly got your potential to highlight some important relationships and to raise important questions. But I've tried to approach it in a critical and academic manner, in the spirit that criticism can help improve the model. I'm not trying to destroy it by this process. And so I want to now really take these questions. When I first saw the model, when I first printed out the materials that were sent, to be honest, I found it a little bit hard to understand what were the relationships that were being shown in that diagram. And I think your presentation this morning has helped me in that respect. Because, for example, you have said that all the five panels are connected. But when I looked at that diagram, I didn't see lines connecting the panels, so I wasn't quite clear on that. And similarly, I realised that the driver was central, but again, I didn't quite understand how it related to each of the other boxes. And I also found the use of the two axes a little bit confusing, because one axis, the vertical one, goes from stabilisation to stabilisation, whereas I'm used to a situation where at an axis you've got two opposites at either end. So I just didn't quite understand. I think I now see in that, I think what you're saying is that one of the key aims of the driver is to achieve stabilisation. But I also wonder whether stabilisation is actually really the end result we want, because in English, I guess that means at least holding things as they are and preventing them getting worse. Whereas what you might be trying to do, particularly on the left-hand side of the horizontal axis, is actually to improve things, not just stabilise things. So I wondered about the word stabilisation, and I said about the connections. Yeah, and I also wondered why the boxes were in that particular order, because again, when you've got axes, like you have, vertical, horizontal, I would think, for example, that the PPP, being located between stabilisation and decline, is somehow some combination of those two. Now, I'm sure that is not intended, but that was simply the visual impact it had on me, as somebody who came to this, as we say in English, totally cold, totally ignorant, not knowing the thinking that had gone on beforehand. So I think that there may be ways to slightly adjust some of these things, put in some more arrows and to just kind of rethink the visual presentation a little to try to communicate what we see as the key connections, what are the secondary connections, what's the direction it's heading and so on. I also then began to ask a little bit, well, what do we mean by a complex urban transformation? And I think I came to the view that it was, to me, usually more complex than what the model suggests. In particular, to try to find an example of this, I was doing this in a great rush. So I went to some material I had, which is for the area where I was actually born and brought up, in the north of Manchester. And there is a regeneration project ongoing there at the moment. And the quotation on the left-hand side is taken from what the driver of that regeneration says about that area. And if I just read it through, I think it shows some of this complexity. North Manchester is characterised by high levels of unemployment. Well, we're familiar enough with that. But it then also says high crime rates, derelict land and buildings, that's very much the implosion bit that you have talked about. Poor quality and choice of housing, so there's a kind of housing issue there that's somehow related to the business issue, but not quite the same. Poor health and educational attainment. And then the last bit again emphasises, I think, a point that it is strongly there in the model, the problem of vacant land and what you do about it. And I pulled out some data again, and I apologise if it's personal, but I say I was doing this quick and it was stuff I had to hand. So this is the area that I originally come from. 2001 census, UK census, an area of almost 14,000 people, mainly white, so it's a poor white area. And I put that up because ethnicity is often part of the equation in this, in many European cities. If we're looking at urban transformations, part of the transformation process and part of the potential drivers of transformation are different ethnic groups. So I would suggest, I would put that on the table as one thing we might talk about. A high proportion of these people have got health problems. You know, almost 3 in 10 have got some kind of illness, injury, whatever, and that keeps them out of the labour market. And if you're out of the labour market, other problems pile up. So health may be an issue. Unemployment, again, very high. I've not got the long-term unemployment figure, but that will also be high. And again, a basic question about qualifications. Very low level of formal educational qualification. So if we're talking about a transformation of an area like this, even if we manage to fill those 50 sites with buildings, the question is, how will that impact upon all those things? Because even if there's jobs in the area, if people have not got any qualifications, if they've got long-term illness, they will not necessarily access the jobs that are created there. So it's really just to say, you know, how difficult the problems are. I'm not coming, you know, typical academic, I'm not coming necessarily with answers, but I really am emphasising how multiple the relationships are and how very often there are self-reinforcing feedback loops in this which create what can be a very quick downward spiral for an area.
Also, if you have 92 white versus 81 in Manchester,
yeah,
is that date is in conflict with the other or not?
No, they're all the same date. It's the census in 2001. So it's
I believe it's the opposite. More, less white and more troops.
Well, I mean, again, I think this little discussion just illustrates some of the issues. And there may be differences between different countries, there may be differences between different cities. But this particular area historically has been a working class, white, mainly white neighbourhood.
That's clear.
You know, and so we, in some ways, some of its problems may be that it hasn't had enough ethnic minorities, certainly to sustain housing markets. I could talk more about it this afternoon if you want. I think we need to move on, or else my colleagues will not. My colleagues will not get a chance. So the drivers, the model talks about looking for a complex network of actors and not just a public administration. And again, I think there's quite a lot of evidence from particularly British approaches to regeneration, quite a lot of evidence that says it is useful at times to create a special driver to build the networks, to move people and to have a vision for the area. However, what I'm also saying, I think, is that we need to look at the existing institutions, that it's not just a case of putting a new institution in, but part of the analysis leading up to this should be what I've called an audit of existing institutions. And I've gone in the little paper that I started writing to put the kind of questions that we might ask. You know, what is to be the driver? What powers make it a driver? And I think you can ask this even of organisations that are not there as drivers at the moment. So you can look at neighbourhoods and say, well, who are the organisations that are there? Who are the institutions that have a presence there already? What powers do they have? What incentives do they respond to? We cannot, if we're to operate effectively as a driver, you cannot just do it by giving instructions to people. You have to understand what they respond to, what makes it more likely that they will do what you want them to do. Similarly, many of them, and this is particularly true of public authorities, have got constraints upon their action. They've not got enough money. They're constrained by legal powers. Community organisations may have problems of long-term viability. They may not be totally representative and so on. But we ask the questions. What impacts are their actions having? Yeah, they're open questions, but we try to identify in the area what's there already and run these things past them. What are their other connections? And I'm suggesting that we could almost draw a kind of one of your diagrams, perhaps, you know, that begins to map out. There's a network over here of housing bodies, community organisations, mothers and toddlers groups, whatever it might be. There's a business network over there that's got some links. There's a public sector network. Now, how do we connect these up? How do we create a driver in this situation? Again, we can discuss more this afternoon. The functions. The functions, you've said, concentrate on the containers rather than the contents. And again, I would raise some questions about that to, in the spirit of discussion and get ideas. Depends how narrowly you take containers. But if we just look at containers as buildings, it can understate the importance, for example, of the spaces between buildings. And I guess the top slide shows that, you know, in the city of consumption and so on. Very often it's spectacle, it's street theatre, it's displays, it's tourism. These are the kind of things that you're looking to as important catalysts in terms of creating new opportunities. So spaces matters as well as the buildings do.
I think space the places.
Yes.
You have to connect both.
Yeah. Similarly, I think there is a risk, if we just look at containers, of getting into what became known, and I think Ivan was going to come to this, but he wrote a classic paper about 15 years ago about what he called property-led regeneration. And I guess there was some experience from Britain that if you just do the property bit, if you just put up new apartments and business parks and so on, again, it begs the question of what happens to the people who are in the area, like that data I put up earlier on. So I think in Britain we've generally moved away from a view that it's just the containers to try to look at the contents and the actors. And there's also a strong European narrative, as I'm sure you're aware now, around the Lisbon agenda, competitiveness. And again, that then brings in some of the words that I put down there, you know, innovation, how do we create innovative responses, innovative networks in these cities that are imploding? What skills does the labour force have? What skills the trainers need, obviously. Territorial capital, not just looking at the city, but it's regional and European context, and what relationships it has there. What are the strengths and weaknesses of that? Cultures, again, to some extent linked with the ethnicity, but not entirely, but seen as important. And again, identities. I've done some other work, which I forgot to mention, on place identities and community involvement. And overall, I would suggest, perhaps as well as thinking of containers, we need to think a bit about assets and liabilities. What have we got in those containers that are actually assets? The building may be empty, but it might be a great building. You know, so that may be both a liability at the moment because we can't use it, but a potential to do something with it. Even not very attractive old buildings may still be assets if they provide cheap floor space. You know, I'll carry on this afternoon. I'm trying to watch my time. The eight different models or terminologies, again, Remo's talked about them. I think underlying this, and I think you've answered a bit of this in the presentation this morning, I think underlying this is the idea that very often in the city we're seeing contested spaces, spaces that people are in conflict over, whose space it is, what it means, what identity it has. The slides are perhaps not very clear, but there are two walls in Chicago, less than a kilometre apart. And the top one is about basically selling new condominiums and a very much, again, property-led regeneration. And the bottom one is it's a Mexican-speaking neighbourhood, which is feeling very threatened by this process. And their mural is really, you know, defending their neighbourhood in these circumstances. So, you know, there's this question about, well, whose city is it? And whose neighbourhood is it? And how all of this relates to things like market strength. You know, if the problem is disinvestment, then it may be crucial that the public sector, despite the weaknesses you've spoken about, really has to do quite a lot before you're going to get private sector confidence in the area. So it may be very, very difficult, first of all, if it's a really imploded area, to get a public-private partnership going, because what's in it for us if you're a business? You know, so there may be a need for the public sector to do it, but if you've got strength in the market, the risk is always then that it will tip towards gentrification, because people are wanting to come in and displace other uses. So I think the question is really what you raised indeed in the early presentation. What kind of drivers for what kind of model, and then with what kind of skills? PPP and the actors, I've really argued that it may, you know, there may be circumstances where straight PPP is right, but I think they're probably generally going to be the exception, because usually when you're talking major urban transformation, you're usually talking about doing things to areas where people are already living in them. And you can't write those people out of the equation. So I would ask, you know, what about civil society organisations? And again, you know, raise words like power, institutional culture, capacity building. The visual on this is from a social housing neighbourhood in Edinburgh, where I did quite a lot of voluntary work in the 1970s and 80s. And the main actors in that neighbourhood were actually a group of women who put together an organisation because they felt that their kids were treated in the school as if they were no-hopers and were never going to go anywhere. And they said that there's talent in this area and we want to produce it. So they were really the key drivers of transformation in that area. So, you know, there are different models, that's all I'm saying. The tools bit, I'll give a plug. I did this book, which I brought one copy along, which I'll pass around, for the World Urban Forum this summer. And it was funded by our International Development Department in the UK. And we looked at very much the questions I think you're raising about, you know, the limitations of traditional town planning approaches, the formal master plan that says in 20 years' time, this area will be industry, this area will be shopping, this area will be three-storey housing, all that sort of stuff, yeah. And what we really argue in this book is that, particularly in context of rapid urbanisation, but by no means exclusively there, and I think the same holds in situations of urban implosion, that sort of traditional plan does not solve anything. In fact, it may actually make things worse. What we say is that you need analytical and cognitive skills, and again, I'm happy to talk more this afternoon, that things like communication, negotiation, understanding diversity, planning for inclusion, all these things are important. Strategy, visioning, I think you mentioned again, important. Management skills, managing people, managing spaces, managing time, and monitoring and learning, building this into the process, not bolting it on afterwards. All these things are very important. And we tried through 25 case studies or something to illustrate these sort of skills and to highlight them. And again, if we go on into the discussion this afternoon on the fourth panel, then we could talk a bit about some of these other things. The Egan report, which we've got in the UK, which talks about skills for sustainable communities and emphasises what they call generic cross-cutting skills that are not specific to any one profession. And that has been taken forward into some European work now. And one thing I finished up suggesting is, you know, is it worth thinking of the partners, the Budapest City and Leipzig and so on, doing an audit, again, of what skills they've got. What skills have they got? What do they think they need? How do they get skills? How do they apply them? What can they share with others? There may be scope within the project to create a really dynamic learning process to skills. And in terms of skills, I think it's important to challenge assumptions. And again, I've just really listed on this slide some of the ways that this can be done. And this relates to a Baltic Sea project that I've been involved in, which has got quite mainly focuses on small, rural, peripheral towns, which have also got huge problems. Has also got a strong youth involvement dimension. So there's a number of ways that it can be done. So in summary, I've taken a half hour. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff here. I look forward to the dialogue and the discussions. And I think there's a real possibility to develop some very imaginative approaches to this very serious problem of urban implosion and urban transformations that you've rightly identified. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Keith.